The CBS Radio Workshop, dedicated to man's imagination, the theater of the mind. Today, the Space Merchants. Frederick Pohl's and C.M. Kornbluth's modern classic about the future when the wizards of high-pressure salesmanship take over. It's the story of Mitchell Courtney, a copysmith, star-class with Fowler Shock & Associates, the biggest and greatest advertising firm of the future, and a tale of a rocket ride to Venus. As I rubbed depilatory soap on my face and waited for my beard to melt away, I switched on the news over the bathroom mirror. A funny little man whom I finally recognized as the president had given another speech last night. There was a shot of the Venus rocket squat and silvery on the Arizona sands. A report of rioting in Panama, the Consi underground probably. Then the phone rang. Hello.
Chief, you're due at the office.
Can't you see I'm dressing?
Oof, why that tie?
Never mind. Why are you phoning me?
Mr. Shockins called a board meeting a half an hour early. He's going to name the head of the Venus Project today, so hurry.
Hester, do me a favor. Will you call my wife, Dr. Nevin? Make an appointment at noon for Walter J. Silver.
For who?
Walter J. Silver.
Are you crazy?
Well, she won't talk to me, Hester. Use the fake name. Maybe I can get in.
All right. Now get down here fast.
Down on Fifth Avenue, there wasn't a pedicab in sight. For a moment, I thought I had a Cadillac with two men peddling it, but somebody else got it. I did the best I could. I hopped aboard the rolling northbound sidewalk and found myself hemmed in by a milling, perspiring group of consumers. I got off at Shockin' Towers and rode the express elevator to our offices on the 182nd floor. By sheer luck, I'd just taken my seat with my fellow board members when Fowler Shockin walked in.
Gentlemen, good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Shockin.
Now, sit down, sit down. I'm going to stand for a moment. I've just come back on the moon rocket, as you know. Want to stretch my legs.
How is our project on the moon, Mr. Shockin?
Gentlemen, I'm proud. And I'm humble when I say it's successful. The mining ventures are bringing the people here on Earth many of the metals our forefathers exhausted long ago. The colonists seem quite untouched by the Consi revolutionists. Only 6 instances of Consi sabotage in the past week. Thank you. Now I'd like to hear some reports on our other projects. Industrial anthropology?
Well, I wish to report that according to the midnight indices, all primary schools east of the Mississippi are being fed our Fowler Shock and packaged school lunches, soy burger, and regenerated steak. Now, these lunches are being packaged in our star's alias Red, which means that in the future, these young consumers will be completely conditioned to buying everything packaged in our special color, star's alias Red. They'll have no choice.
Magnificent, magnificent. Now, let's hear from point of sale.
Well, Mr. Shockin, sir, we have tested our latest beverage, Coffeeist, in 15 key cities. Each sample of Coffeeist contains 3 milligrams of a simple alkaloid. Nothing harmful, but definitely habit-forming. After 10 weeks, the customer is hooked for life. A cure will cost $1,000, so it's easier to buy more Coffeeist. 3 cups with every meal and a hot jug beside the bed at night.
You know, gentlemen, on my trip back from the moon, I began to wonder, are we getting soft?
No, sir, Mr. Shockin.
Thank you, Matt. But I wonder, were we doing enough for our consumers? Those consumers sleeping out there on the stairways. I know how lucky they are being able to buy the wonderful goods we make, package and sell them. Seaweed suits, soya burger, regenerated steak, Coffeeist, straw butt cigarettes. But I still wondered, were we in the upper classes of advertising getting soft? But now I've decided Fowler Shock & Associates is not soft, that it's ready to meet a challenge greater than our organizing India into one giant cartel, greater than our development of the moon, the greatest challenge the world of advertising and promotion has ever met, the colonizing of Venus.
Shockin's sense of the dramatic was never better. The touch of a button on the conference table before him, the lights were dimmed. Another touch of a button, and one wall of the room became a giant projection screen. We are looking at it again. The Venus rocket. But this time we knew that one of us would be named to head the Venus project.
There she stands, gentlemen. The Venus rocket. A 1,000-foot monster, surrounded now by steel scaffolding and aglow with welding torches. And here's how you'll see her 6 months from now, just before the takeoff. Just before the takeoff, there's the ship that Congress gave us, Fowler, Shock, and Associates. There's the ship that will span the stars. 6.5 million tons of trapped lightning and steel. A rocket-powered Mayflower for 1,800 pioneers seeking a new world to settle. Who will man it?
Gentlemen, it's our job, A, to justify my buying enough congressmen to vote us that rocket. B, to sell 1,800 crazy consumers on giving up life on the Earth for the sulfur and nitrogen and canned life on Venus.
Yes, sir, Mr. Sharkin. Yes, sir.
I've made my choice of the man to head up our Venus rocket project. His name is Mitchell Courtney.
Congratulations, Mitch.
Thanks, Matt.
Terrific break for a young and experienced guy.
Yes, I'm flattered.
Fowler seemed to be sure he knew what he was doing.
He seemed to be sure.
Well, drop into my office anytime you need advice.
Yeah, thanks. I'll keep my back to the wall.
Good luck with Venus Project, Mitch. As far as I'm concerned, you can't sell people on life in a sardine can, even if you throw in a slave girl as a premium.
This way, Mr. Silver. Dr. Nevins will see you now.
Dr. Nevins?
Mitch, how did you get in?
I used another name. I had to see you, Kathy. After all, you're my wife.
I am not your wife.
My certificate's on file.
Mine isn't. It never will be. As soon as this year is up, we're through.
Now, wait. I've got some news.
Well, what is it?
I've been put in charge of the Venus Project at the agency.
Congratulations.
Oh, Kathy, I love you. I'm not above using this promotion as an excuse to celebrate. Won't you go out on the town with me tonight?
No.
Well, I promise not to make a scene. You're the only one I want to celebrate with.
All right, Mitch. My apartment at 7. And now let me take care of the sick people.
Outside Kathy's office, I hailed a two-man Cadillac pedicab and told him to step on it to Shockin Towers. I took the express elevator to the top of the towers. I ran across the heliport to Shockin's private helicopter. I had a very important date out of New York's newest airport at Montauk. I was due to meet the Earth's number one celebrity, Jack O'Shea, the first and only man who had ever set a rocket down on Venus and returned. As I landed, his jet was just coming in. And as I jumped to the ground, his jet moved up the runway toward me, and the place was crawling with women. I'd forgotten what a swath Jack had cut with the women on his cross-country lecture tours. In fact, I'd almost forgotten until his Pinkerton cards cleared away through the vast crowds. I'd almost forgotten that Jack was a midget. Welcome to New York, Jack.
Hello, Mitch. I hear you're number one boy now.
Well, I still work for Fowler Shockin, Jack, but the Venus rocket project is mine.
You're a fool to take it.
Oh, you're joking.
Am I? All right, fellas, Mr. Courtney's from Fowler Shockin. You can check off now.
Yes, sir, Mr. O'Shea.
Crummy guards. I never get a free moment.
Well, that's the penalty for being a celebrity. This way, Jack. Our helicopter's over here.
Hey. Hey, look out, Mitch. That cargo ship.
Darn fool pirates.
Run, Mitch. Run! Hey, Mitch. Mitch, you all right?
Yes, I'm okay. Thanks. Thanks a lot.
Mitch, that was no accident. That pilot had orders to get one of us. And I think it was you.
I had to start pumping Jack O'Shea about Venus. Shocken was paying him a fat retaining fee as a consultant. Jack didn't seem to want to talk, however. I showed him projections, maps, drawings, charts. But he barely said a word worth recording on tape. Suddenly an idea hit me. I made a phone call.
Oh, Kathy. Kathy, do you know that this is the first time I've laughed, really laughed, since I came back to Earth?
Is it, Jack? I'm complimented.
And that this is the first time I've been alone with two people since I came back?
I thought you'd had enough of being alone in that rocket on Venus.
It must have been a shattering experience, Jack.
Kathy, you're the first person who seems to have understood that. Not exciting. Not thrilling. It was frightening. Shattering, as you said. It wasn't at all like what I've told the women's clubs, the reporters. That's been a pack of lies. The atmosphere, for instance. It's really formaldehyde. Embalming fluid. Who would understand that, except the dead? And the heat, who'd understand that? Who's lived in heat above the boiling point of water? If there was any water on Venus, which there isn't.
Why did you go, Jack?
That's easy. You're a doctor. You know about midgets. We eat one-third the food, drink one-third the liquids, inhale and exhale one-third the air full-size humans require. They'd never have gotten that test rocket to Venus if I hadn't been the size I am, if I hadn't been a child who's been laughed at, who'd turned test pilot to prove myself. I was so small they could pack me into that test rocket with all the equipment necessary to sustain me. 83 days. It takes a lot of equipment to sustain even a midget.
Six of those days were on Venus. What was it like, Jack?
I think the closest thing on Earth is the painted desert. The wind blows hard. It tears rocks apart. Soft rocks disappear and make dust storms. The light is funny. Nobody ever saw a light like that on Earth. Orangey, brownish light. Very, very bright, but threatening. And there's no water on Venus. No vegetation. No living thing.
In the quiet of Kathy's apartment, Jack O'Shea talked for another hour. Then suddenly, with hardly a word of goodbye, he stood up and walked out. Thanks, Kathy. Thanks for changing plans and letting me bring him.
Don't mention it, Mitch. Do you think you got it all on your little tape recorder?
You knew I had one in my pocket.
I was sure you would have. And I hope you play it back to yourself over and over and over.
Kathy.
Yes, over and over and over. Until even you were convinced how hopeless your Venus project is.
Hopeless? Oh, our science boys have answers to all those objections.
Mitch. Mitch, doesn't that mind of yours ever stop selling somebody something? Do you have to be a contriving, selfish Machiavelli who serves Fowler, Schocken, and never people?
People? You mean consumers.
Oh, Mitch, must you always be top dog? Making money, money, money without scruples, without ethics? What was that?
A gunshot.
Jack's out there.
Well, I'll go and see. Oh, he's all right. Those are his steps.
Mitch! Mitch, I was standing talking with the doorman and someone shot him in cold blood. Someone thought that doorman was you.
Well, Mitch, trouble with the Venus Project already?
Personal trouble, Mr. Shocken.
Personal trouble?
Yes, yesterday afternoon a cargo helicopter tried to drop its full load on me, and last night somebody tried to shoot me. I've had a couple of head-on collisions with Matt Runstead.
Are you accusing a Shocken man? That's treason. Killing an agency employee is an offense against the United States government. Any idea who's behind this?
No. Well, it might be the Consies, of course.
Well, conservationists hate us. They're trying to sabotage everything we want to do, but they're crazy, mixed up, unorganized. They want to go back to the old days when we had natural wood, natural water, all that sort of claptrap. Forget them.
Well, it could be another advertising agency.
It could be. But look, Mitch, I made you copysmith, star class, because I thought you could live up to your responsibilities. Now, you're young, but you have power. Five words from you, and a few Indian consumers will find their lives completely changed. That's power. Absolute power. So you must remember, power has its compensation. And its hazards. That's all.
With this encouragement, I continued work on the Venus Project for the next 6 weeks. I even talked Kathy into giving up her patience for 48 hours and taking a flying trip with me to Arizona. I wanted to get the feel of the giant rocket itself as it was being built.
Your credentials, please. Army intelligence, check. Navy intelligence, check. Air Force intelligence, check. FBI, check. AEC, check. CIA, check. 4A's, check. I hope you two are all right. This way, please.
Kathy and I followed the security officer into the vast steel shell of the Venus rocket.
1,257 feet high. More cubits than the average New York apartment building.
He took us into the dormitories for the 1,800 pilgrims I had to sell on the idea of going to Venus.
Closed cycle food, water, and air regeneration. One-third living space, one-third drive, one-third freight.
It was an inferno and a promise of paradise. A monument to 22nd century engineering and an incomparable monument to the sheer artistry of the machine.
Mitch, do you always have to talk like a copysmith?
Huh? Oh, I noticed you were impressed too, Kathy.
Well, it draws me and repels me. I can't explain it.
It excites me. Kathy, how'd you like to go on to San Diego with me?
Whatever for?
Well, Matt Runstead's boys in our San Diego office have been gathering test figures on our sample colonizing campaigns. Very helpful.
No, I can't come, Mitch. I'd love to, but my patients back in New York need me.
Oh. Well, then I'll get you aboard the return jet and see you in New York in 48 hours. I didn't tell them I was coming to San Diego. I walked in on our entire San Diego staff playing push-button poker. What's the meaning of this?
Oh, who are you, mister?
Mitchell Courtney.
Well, it's Courtney from New York, fellas.
What are the reports on the Venus sampling, Harris?
There aren't any, sir.
Tally sheets, punch card codes, Sigma progress charts? Nothing on the attitudes of consumers toward life on Venus?
Well, nothing, sir. Nothing.
You've made up everything you've given me so far.
Well, I'm afraid so, sir.
Well, get New York on the line. I want Matt Runstead.
Well, he's not there.
Well, where is he?
Well, he called this morning. He's taken off for Little America to look after our interests there.
And left you holding the bag, huh? Find out when the next jet leaves for Little America. Little America is a dollar trap for the tourists of the world, conceived and promoted by Fowler Shockin. The clerk at our hotel told me Runsted had checked in for a two-day tour of the Stars Alias Glacier, that he already had started out on the trail. I rented the glacier equipment, Antarctic coveralls, hood, gloves, boots, and power pack to warm them. And on my back, I had an EDF that went beep, beep when I was on the trail, and beep, beep when I lost my way in the snow. I set out after Runsted, beeping and still mad. I stopped after a while and cooked a meal in my electric pocket. It wasn't bad. Well, very bad. I had some coffee to pep me up, and then I set out again. My feet hit a drift, and I stumbled. The wind was blowing stronger now. The snow flurries were more frequent. I must have gone on another hour. How far in distance, I don't know. And then up ahead, I saw the figure of a man. Matt! Matt Runsted!
Matt! Matt Courtney!
Matt, I've been following you!
Me? What do you want with me, Matt?
I want to know what happened in the San Diego office. What are you up to, Matt? A sudden blast of wind hurled snow into my face, and then, as it cleared, I saw Matt raising his skis high above his head. I saw them coming down toward me as he pole-axed me.
The CBS Radio Workshop has brought you part one of The Space Merchants, adapted for radio by Charles Monroe, with original music composed and conducted by Samuel Matlofsky. Produced and directed in New York by Paul Roberts. Stotz Cotsworth starred as Mitch Courtney, Virginia Kay as Kathy. Others in today's cast were Bob Dryden, Ed Prentice, Mary Patton, Bob Reddick, Joe Julian, Ralph Bell, Ian Martin, and Joe Helgeson. The sound effects were devised by Tom Buchanan and Tom Perkins, the engineer, Jack Katz. This is Ted Pearson inviting you to join us next week for the second part of the CBS Radio Workshop production of The Space Merchants.